for Leiden. This is The Connection. Michigan has revived John McCain's insurgency, and it's extended the Republican brawl. McCain won by 7 percentage points yesterday, but it was a record number of Democrats and independents who swung the vote. The chagrined face of Michigan's Governor John Engler clarifies this fight. Now more than ever, it's the Republican establishment against a huge uprising that can feel more like a hostile takeover if you're a core Republican. John McCain says his candidacy is about creating a new reform Republican Party in the spirit of Teddy Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan. He says it's Al Gore's worst nightmare. But is it what Republicans want? In Michigan, two-thirds of the Republican Party faithful voted for George W. Bush, and still he lost what was called the Republican primary. Is that fair? It's said to be the first primary in memory that had about equal numbers of party members and outsiders voting all together. Connection listeners, is there a McCain party you want to join here? Is the Bush party getting to sound a little clubby, a little exclusive? The Connection phone is 1-800-423-8255. In Massachusetts, by the way, a record number of Democrats are re-registering so as to vote for John McCain in the Republican primary. Is this crossover thing going to be his strength or his weakness? 1-800-423-TALK or 1-800-423-8255 makes the Campaign 2000 connection. Our guest off the top is David Brooks, senior editor of the Weekly Standard, and Ron Brownstein, political correspondent of the Los Angeles Times. Starting with you, David Brooks, where is the Republican Party's head this morning?
It's got two heads. It's Sybil. It's the Sybil Party. It's you know, as you said, we've got one candidate in the Republican Party who appeals to independents and one who appeals to conservatives. The odd thing is the way these two candidates have been shaken to extremes. You know, if you follow the coverage, it's as if you've got, you know, Che Guevara running against Barry Goldwater.
Right.
The reality is these guys are both, you know, solid conservatives. Well,
Martin Luther against the Pope or something.
Right.
There's this funny religious metaphor, you know, Christians, bigots, you know, all sorts of charges. We've got to talk about that. Anyway, go ahead.
It's a very interesting religious subtext to the party. But the fact is, on ideological grounds, neither of them are ideological people. Both of them are, you know, your basic Republican conservative. In some ways, McCain is probably more conservative than Bush on defense policy, on foreign policy, on spending, I'd say. In some ways, Bush is more conservative. But for different reasons, they have gone off to the left and to the right to attract what has become their core vote, and now they've got to switch back. You know, I'd still think that Bush has the advantages and is more likely to be the nominee, but I'd also say McCain has an easier case to make to show he's a true conservative, because he really is much more conservative than he's been painted, or than he's painted himself in the past month or so.
Ron Brownstein, what do all these numbers imply about a state you know too well, California?
So you could have an extraordinary result in California, where McCain's ability to attract independents and Democrats give him the edge in what we have our open primary. He may get the most popular vote of any of the candidates on the ballot. Everybody is thrown into the ballot together. You can vote for anyone you want, but delegates will be allocated solely by the vote of party members. So you could have a situation in which McCain wins the popular vote, now seems very plausible to me, and Bush still squeezes out the Republican majority and gets a winner-take-all, all the delegates in California, which would be an extraordinary result, obviously give McCain a great deal to shout about. Not a preordained conclusion, though, because as you move toward the coasts in particular and you deal with more moderate Republican electorates, McCain may have an opportunity. I think his campaign saw yesterday as a ring of fire they had to get through alive, and now they realize they cannot win the Republican nomination if they're losing Republicans 3-1, Republican voters. They have to find a way to reintroduce them to Republicans, to emphasize, as David said, some of his more conservative views, and to try to narrow down this margin. They don't have to win Republicans, but they really don't want to lose them by 40 points consistently.
Project these splits from South Carolina, New Hampshire, Michigan, onto California. How does this break down?
Well, Chris, the important thing is that McCain has to change. If we're talking about the open primary in California, I think he can probably win it, as I said. But if you're talking about the delegates, he has to change the balance in the Republican Party, because what's happened since New Hampshire, people have focused so much on how George W. Bush has done with the most conservative elements and with the religious right. But in fact, Bush has taken away the center right from McCain. He is beating him badly among moderate Republicans and even independents who call themselves conservative. Another group sort of right in the center of the electorate. They gave McCain a big edge in New Hampshire. Bush has now battled back to a draw in South Carolina and Michigan. The striking thing about Michigan is that each group in the electorate, Republicans, Democrats, independents, voted almost exactly the same way they did in South Carolina. They divided between the two men in almost exactly the same proportions. The difference was that they made up different shares of the overall electorate. There are a lot more of McCain's people and fewer of Bush's people. Can you really depend on having a majority of the electorate in a lot of states in a Republican primary be non-Republicans to win the nomination? I think that's a, you know, that's a long shot to depend on for McCain, and as a result, they recognize they've got to do better among Republicans over time.
And yet, you know, George Bush, it seems to me, is terribly weakened by all this. He looks more and more like, you know, the company kid, yep, the owner's son, you know, the last white guy in the country club trying to keep it that way. I mean, Andover, Yale, all of this stuff comes back as echoing when he says, we don't want, in effect, we don't want your kind in our primary. You know, it just churns up all sorts of class and social messages that he doesn't need.
As I'm sure David would agree, how ironic. Also, Bush started off last summer as the candidate who was going to broaden the party. That was the whole point of the compassion.
Yeah, this was
the message he was going to reach out to new voters. Now he ends up as the defender of the base against the great insurgent and the infidel.
David Brooks, I mean, can he win that way?
Yeah, well, I don't think he can win the fall that way. He looks like Bush, who's just running. I mean, looks like Dole 96 with a little brighter candidate, a guy who's running a conventional Republican campaign who can't reach across. As Ron said, that compassionate conservative stuff is something, A, Bush actually does believe in, but it was designed when they thought that Steve Forbes was the main opposition, and this was going to win over the independents. You know, he had every advantage in the world coming into this election, the Michigan one. He had the momentum, he had the money, and he had the famous angler political machine. And if he can't close the deal on this, in this election, it does begin to look weak. I think we're right to focus on California, which will probably be the whole ball of wax, and maybe something Ron could fill us in. Am I right in recalling that you had a race where you had a moderate Republican, Tom Campbell, running against a conservative Republican, Bruce Hershenson, mm-hmm, for Senate?
We got a couple, yeah, in the 80s, and obviously... We had Schau did win in the 80s, Ed Schau in 86. A moderate can win. I mean, but again, I think, David, the thing is that ultimately McCain at the moment is not winning even moderate Republicans. I mean, he's losing moderate Republicans. But your point, I think, is exactly right. One of the erosion, if Bush is going to have erosion among Republicans, it may be partially because McCain repositions himself and reminds people he's a conservative, but it's more likely to be because of growing doubt about what had been Bush's greatest asset, the sense that he could win. And you now see these national polls with Bush running about even with Gore and McCain now way ahead, you know, just amazing, 20 points or so ahead. Potentially, I think the McCain people feel like that the conventional wisdom is that a war of attrition favors Bush because he has more resources, more endorsements, etc. But if he starts losing a bunch of states over time, as he did yesterday, you may get more rank-and-file Republican voters, forget the elected officials, who get jittery and say, look, the main thing we want to do is end the Clinton era, and John McCain may be our best chance of doing that.
Let me ask you, David Brooks, if this party could go into convention right now and be something of a deliberative body on the prospects, as conventions used to be, what would it want?
It would want George W. Bush. There's
still
a lot of hostility to McCain. You know, you would think if it was a purely opportunistic party, here's a party that has not been able to win independent votes for the past decade or more, and here's a guy who delivers them. You'd think if it was an opportunistic party, it would seize John McCain and say, okay, you're the guy, let's ride to the White House. But it's not purely, it's an animal, and there is a lot of hostility to McCain for a lot of reasons, some of which a lot of Republicans are tax cuts are a big issue. And if you're not for big tax cuts, that shows you're somehow not a real Republican. A lot of Republicans are religious conservatives. McCain is not a religious conservative. They know it. A lot of Republicans are movement conservatives. And the fact that the media likes John McCain is a veto on him. There's the consciousness is, you know, the media likes him, he must not be one of us. There's almost a tribal, sort of a ethnic nationalism, identity politics going on, with conservatives being the identity group. He's not in our identity group. So there's, I would say, a high level of hostility to McCain, which, if the Republican Party were to meet today, would carry the day.
Who wants to decode this sectarian fighting. And it goes without saying, as we've said, that these candidates are centrist, pretty sophisticated guys, and yet the passion around this fight, starting really in South Carolina and the adoption by the religious conservatives of George W. Bush, it's gotten very unusual for American politics. I mean, here's Pat Robertson attacking Warren Rudman for being a vicious bigot, he says. Catholic governors sending phone messages into Michigan saying, no, George Bush is not anti-Catholic, although Bob Jones University, where he spoke, is accused of being anti-Catholic. What's all this about? And where does it go in a place like California?
We'll take a crack at it. I think that, as David suggested, some of it is just genuinely ideological contention. McCain and Bush both come from the center-right, and in that sense, it's significant that none of the, quote, movement conservatives ever got to the finals. It says something about where the conservative movement is now. But the fact is that, nonetheless, they do offer different directions by abandoning large tax cuts and by imposing campaign finance reform on a party that really doesn't want it. At the congressional level, at least, McCain is offering a very sharp change in direction on some key issues, and the religious conservatives also see him as someone who would sublimate their concerns. So there is genuine passion in the electorate. I was struck in South Carolina, Chris, that I can't recall covering an election in which people cared as much about the outcome, except for maybe the David Duke races in Louisiana and the first Giuliani Dinkins race. But I mean, it's very unusual to have people care as much as they did on that. I suspect that there will be an instinct to sort of further polarize, but smart politicians in both camps, I think, realize that they ultimately, neither one of these coalitions right now looks strong enough to decisively defeat the other. And if I was John McCain, I would be doing what he did last night, which is talking about, you know, Republicans, I am one of you. And if I'm George W. Bush, I've got to be thinking of a way to start getting some more independents to vote for me, because you're not going to beat them by many, many more than 40 points among Republicans. And if you can't win doing that, you've got to find some way to cut into his strength. So, I suppose the personal dynamics of primaries are such that they always get nastier and more divisive as they go, but a logical political strategy for both of these guys would be to make some overtures to the other's base at this point.
Yeah, a good way to figure out who's on which side is to say, do you think the Republican Party is basically on the right trajectory? Because McCain has some quite conservative folks on his side, Gary Bauer, Lindsey Graham, Vin Weber, the former congressman from Minnesota. Those are real conservatives. But I think they would say the Republican Party has gotten off course and needs some sort of fundamental realignment. Whereas the people who are on Bush's side say, we haven't had a good spokesman. We were stuck with Gingrich and Dole. They ran bad campaigns. They were bad spokesmen. But if we got a good, charming spokesman like George W. Bush, basically the same message of tax cuts and limited government would work. The McCain people think the problem is more fundamental.
It's a lot like the Democrats in the early 90s where, you know, Clinton in 92 basically ran on a program that said, we have lost the majority. We have lost the swing vote in America. We have to make fundamental changes. And there were those Democrats who said, no, all we need is Mario Cuomo. We just had Walter Mondale and Michael Dukakis. We need someone to make the old, you know, old song with more passion. With the Democrats had to lose three consecutive presidential elections and wipeouts before they were ready to make a change. And I agree with David 100%. There are a lot of Republicans who are not yet ready to say the formula they're pursuing is not a majority a formula. And McCain is basically explicitly saying that. A lot of people don't want to hear that.
Could I ask you both, can John McCain do without the fervor of the religious right? In other words, I mean, he is in his politics and in his presence, he's a kind of civic reformer without the religious overtones. I think that's, but the Republican Party has gotten used to having that sort of vibration in its its ambition. Can McCain win without it?
I sort of doubt it, actually. You know, he called his book Faith of My Fathers, and that's where John McCain's faith is. It's in the country. He's not a particularly religious guy, but he has faith in patriotism. And his moral language, when he talks about morality, is patriotic secular language.
Yep.
It's not religious language, and that's what differentiates him from some of the people who led the impeachment fight, frankly. And that's why when he talks about the Clinton scandals, he talks about the fundraising scandals, not the sex scandals. I think it's possible, and this is something Gary Bauer tried to do in his campaign. He tried to take the religious fervor and convert it into a patriotic fervor, which is the same morality, but talking about it in maybe a more secular way. And that's one of the reasons Gary Bauer supports John McCain. He can, you know, if he can do that, I think the religious conservatives will respond to that patriotic message. He needs their votes.
He cannot win if they just reject him. I mean, you can't win the Republican nomination, and you can't even win in the fall, because that's a large part of the Republican base, the South and the Midwest.
We talked about California, but not about New York, which, you know, wide-open liberal New York is a very closed, narrow, old Rockefeller Party establishment. What's John McCain's prospect there?
I'd be quaking if I was George Bush, even though it's a close
really?
Primary. Yeah, because I think the way McCain has been introduced to the state as the guy they try to keep you from having a chance to vote for,
right.
the construct in which this has been introduced to the voters, I think is devastating to Bush. And I would suspect that McCain will be very competitive there, as he will be throughout New England. I'd be surprised if after Michigan he doesn't win most of the, if not all, of the New England states that vote on March 7th. You know, the kind of these reform-oriented candidacies, as you know, historically do very well on the coasts in the upper Midwest. I mean, there's sort of a progressive belt in America. You know, you can go back through the progressive era and even
right.
back to the mugwumps. You know, where do they come from? Who votes for these sort of candidates? And there is a pattern there. I think that Bush's, some of it inadvertent, the identification that he has developed with Pat Robertson at this point, Robertson, you know, sort of making himself almost an unofficial, you know, godfather for the campaign, is not something they wanted and is not easy for Bush to overcome in the Northeast. I've got to think that's a problem.
Yeah, a colleague of mine wrote a piece for The Atlantic called The Southern Captivity of the GOP, a guy named Chris Caldwell. And if things go on the course Ron just described, that would be, that thesis would be vindicated. And what you'd say is that Bush, ironically, who was sort of the anti-Gingrich, is really stuck with the Gingrich rump of the party,
yeah.
which is southern-based part of the party.
Stand by for calls. 1-800-423-8255 makes the Morning After Michigan connection with David Brooks of the Weekly Standard and Ron Brownstein of the Los Angeles Times. 1-800-423-TALK is the connection phone. Gordon is calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Oh, good morning.
Morning, Gordon.
How are you?
Good.
Great, lively primary season we've got going on here. And let me just say one thing before I get into my my point. I live in the land of Pat Robertson, and please don't associate me with him.
No, all right.
But I heard a comment yesterday by a Republican strategist that I found rather disturbing, and that is that all the people such as myself who count themselves as being independent or, you know, sometimes Democrat, I basically have always voted for the candidate rather than the party, they're singling us out and poo-pooing us and saying, listen, you know, all these people are rallying right now to McCain, but they're going to desert us in the fall. And I take great umbrage to that. I mean, who are they to suggest that just because I voted this way, it's just to upset the apple cart and make things better in the way of a victory possibility for someone like Gore or Bradley, although I don't think that's really an option at this point. But it's just, where does this kind of mindset come from to dismiss those of us out there who are really part of this groundswell that is, you know, going for someone like John McCain?
There's an easy answer. It's a tactical argument being raised by the Bush campaign to try to reassure nervous Republicans that that they really do have a broad appeal and that they really can be a convincing general election candidate. I mean, I think there is no reason to believe that many of these people voting for McCain will not come back and vote for him in the fall, as you suggest, if he is the nominee. I mean, once you pull the lever for someone, there's a certain degree of investment there. And I think, as I was talking about in New York, the way he would be introduced to the country if he wins this nomination as the guy who stood up to the party establishment because he was willing to say the truth and speak to the national interest instead of the partisan interest, I mean, you can't buy that. In terms of the frame that creates around his candidacy, I think it would make him a very, very formidable general election candidate. Not invincible. There are votes in his history, and certainly the Democrats would try to paint him as more conservative than he has been portrayed so far. But the basic structure of the way the primaries is putting him before the public is extremely positive.
Gordon, when did you become a John McCain forever kind of guy?
When he first started, you know, making the stirrings of potentially running, I thought, I remember this man because I've followed his career in politics and then I kind of, you know, I put him aside when, you know, there was this groundswell with Bush and it looked like, you know, he was the man and then I started thinking about McCain. I was like, where is he? I haven't heard anything from him. Then all of a sudden it's like he came out of the starting gate and I thought, all right, you know, I can't give up on this guy. You know, he didn't give up. And I don't know, I guess there's just this inspirational tone to him that spoke to me very early. And it's plain speaking and forthright. I frankly find Bush, although I guess ultimately if I came down to brass tacks, I might vote for him, I still find him a little smarmy and untried. I think you mentioned something recently in one of your shows, possibly last week or the week before, where you did a profile on him. And it was as if, you know, maybe he's the man at some point, but this isn't his point in history.
Gordon, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. The Morning After Michigan Connection. Eric is on the line.
Hi. I'm kind of curious, how much of the Republican leader opposition to McCain is due to real differences in philosophy or principle, and what percentage of it is due more to a fear that they're going to lose power?
A good question. David Brooks?
Yeah, I'd say most of it is principle. It's funny, if you ask...
Really?
If you ask...
What's the principle?
Campaign finance and tobacco taxes. I think those were, you know, McCain is a conservative, but he's not a movement conservative. Like I said before, they're sort of an identity politics to being a conservative. The mentality is, you know, the media is not on our side, the establishment is not, and we have to stick together. We can't attack one another. And McCain, of course, never has that kind of. He never marches in the group. He's a maverick personality. So I think he signaled, especially on tobacco taxes and campaign finance, that he's not in the tribe. And I don't know whether that's ideological, but it's part ideological and part emotional. It's funny about how the electability issue is playing, because it's been, as Ron mentioned, it's been clear from, say, USA Today polls for a while that McCain does better against Gore, at least now, though that's a fragile coalition he has. But if you ask voters in South Carolina who is more electable, a vast majority said that Bush was. In Michigan, I believe a smaller majority said Bush.
Got even, yes, like, yeah. Like
so
Bush.
It's moving, and McCain made a big play of this last night, and his lieutenants certainly are making a big play of it, but there's still a public perception, I think, among many Republicans that Bush is actually still the more electable, just because they've been told that for, you know, 6 months going.
Right.
That's why I would expect a Republican convention to be much more interested in John McCain than you suggest. I mean...
Yeah, though, don't overestimate the opportunism. It's not an opportunistic party. You know, going into the Republican convention in San Diego 4 years ago, if you pulled people aside, is Bob Dole going to win? They all would have said, no, he's going to lose. Yeah, they still went ahead and nominated him. I don't know. Things, the animal moves in inexplicable ways.
Ron Brownstein, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I basically agree with David. I think, though, that over time, the threat to Bush is a growing sense that he can't win. If in fact, for instance, if Bush loses badly in the popular vote in California, even while eking out a victory among Republicans, and loses New York on the same day, and maybe even loses Ohio on the same day, you could certainly make a case that Bush is going to come back the next week on March 14th and crush McCain across the South, and, you know, keep this thing going. But at some point, if McCain clearly shows himself to be a stronger candidate in the big states that will decide the general election, particularly places like Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, and California, I've got to think that there is at least a few cracks in the Citadel.
Give George Bush a little credit here in the sense that he went into this thing as the inevitable George Bush. It didn't turn out. He's had to fight like crazy for it, and he's going to have to fight a long shot more. What are we learning about him as a real fighting candidate for this nomination?
I actually give him a lot of credit. I think that he really retooled and re-energized himself in South Carolina more than McCain did. McCain went into South Carolina and did the same act that he did in New Hampshire. Didn't play quite as well. Bush did not only go to the right. I think that is a total misrepresentation of what he did. Certainly he mobilized conservatives, certainly went to Bob Jones University, something he'll probably regret for a long time as he's the nominee, without criticizing them. But at the same time, he flanked McCain on the other side. He talked about his own agenda for entitlement reform, education reform, tax cuts, military reform. On domestic issues, Chris, he can speak with more fluency, and he has more ambitious plans than McCain does. And as I said before, he did not only depend on the most conservative elements of the party. He cut into McCain basically everywhere from the center to the right. You know, 1 degree to the right of center, he basically took all of that and left McCain with the center left, which is not a great space to be in a Republican primary. The only reason it worked in Michigan was because that portion of the electorate was so extraordinarily large, which is a testament to McCain. Both these guys, I think, are showing real grit, and not only real grit, but a certain degree of adaptability and creativity as they go forward in this. I think they are producing... From my money, I mean, a contest for the ages. One last point on that. In the South Carolina exit poll, you know, usually we're used to people saying they took the lesser of two evils. 88% of voters in South Carolina said they were satisfied with their choice. I think that speaks pretty well of these two guys.
Yeah, they both have high favorables. I was most impressed by George W. Bush in the South Carolina debate, which I thought he won. And that's always been his weakest point, but his, I think he's been improving debate to debate. And that's, as Republicans looked at, say, the Apollo Theater debate the Democrats had this week, where many thought Gore was dazzling, and I thought Gore was dazzling, they've begun to think forward to the debates, who could survive Gore. Bush is not quite on the Gore level right now, but there's signs of improvement. At the same time, there still are some tactical errors in the campaign. They raised all this money, you know, $70-odd million, and yet they've spent it in buckets. You know, we haven't talked about the Arizona primary, but George W. Bush spent, you know, between $1 million and $2 million there, wasted money, no real chance of winning. And if he was going to win the nomination in a straight shot, he didn't need to spend the money in Arizona anyway. So, you know, he is down to, you know, I don't know exactly how much money he has, but say 12 or 15 or 20 million. That's not that much more than McCain will now have. So,
David Brooks, what has George Bush said in debates and otherwise that's made him a more than, you know, a more interesting, more than two-dimensional candidate?
Well, I think he's fleshed out his policies. His policy on paper is much more fleshed out than the McCain policies. He's got many more policy advisors, and he's adept at talking about things like education reform. He knows more about it than McCain does, and he talks about it better.
Ron Brownstein, I know we've got to let you go at the break. David Brooks, I'm hoping you'll stick with us for a few more calls. We're talking about the morning after Michigan and what looks begins to look like an endless Punch and Judy show between John McCain and George W. Bush. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. We'll be right back. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
From Boston University, this is...
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Politics Connection. We're talking about the results in Michigan and the road ahead. Our guest is Bill Curry, who was a Democratic candidate for governor of Connecticut. Before that, he was counsel to Bill Clinton. He's just finished a book called Unfinished Business about the Clinton administration. Bill Curry, seems obvious that John McCain is thriving on Democratic votes. He seems to have drained the Bradley pool of energy. And to my observation, he enormously threatens Al Gore in the fall. Let me ask you, though, what are Democrats thinking?
Well, they sure feel that they're getting their entertainment dollars value out of the Republican primaries, and number one. Number two, any Democrat, on a visceral level, they are sort of interested by McCain. Democrats love insurgents. To the Republicans, you know, McCain's just a sort of troubled teenager. Not, you know, they tend to go more for the father figure. Democrats love this kind of candidate, just in terms of sensibilities, forget ideology. At the same time, though, sober Democrats are recognizing that the McCain candidacy would present enormous problems to us, thematically, if you will. It is, in a sense, I say, shame on us for the fact that a Republican has stolen our thunder on reform.
Mm-hmm.
It should give the party a great deal to think about. However, having said all that, I don't know if it was Mr. Brooks or Mr. Brownstein earlier who said that the rest of these primaries are going to be mostly Republicans voting. I do think, as much as I like John McCain, I got to know him when I was in the White House, as William Buckley once said to me after a debate, I will vote against you with the deepest affection. I feel a great personal respect for him, little ideological connection. But I think that I think he has his work cut out for him in primaries in which only Republicans are voting.
Is he Al Gore's worst nightmare in a fall election?
Well, let me say this. It goes to a fundamental issue for Gore. And no Democrat will want to say this, but I will anyway. Of course, McCain's the tougher candidate. You know, I see George W. Bush as the kind of guy that, you know, you might have made him president of your fraternity in college, but you wouldn't have made him treasurer because you wanted to make sure there was still beer money at the end of the semester. This is not somebody who is tested and experienced as a political leader. And that's an enormous advantage for us. In effect, just as Bob Dole was too old to be president, George W. Bush is too callow. And that cuts our way.
That cuts your way unless John McCain is the nominee.
Absolutely.
And then what?
Absolutely. Well, all the Bush argumentation, the Bush's own inevitability, McCain can turn on him now in spades and say, "Look at all these polls. I win, you don't." Again, for us, I will say this: it's important that the Democratic Party learn to be specific. We live in a time of the triumph of message over policy. All of the ideas in the political discourse, even more on our side than theirs, are metaphorical, you know, building a bridge to the 21st century, thematic, compassionate conservatism. And the voters out there are trying to figure out, well, now, you know, compassionate conservatism, do I get child care with that? What kind of tax code is that? If we're facing McCain, our advantage is in the specific. On every major social policy in this country, overwhelmingly right now, at least the polling data says, that for the first time since I registered to vote, the voters agree with the Democrats, whether it's health care, minimum wage, Social Security, education. If we are facing McCain, we have to turn around and say, wait a minute, lovely man. It just happens to be out of sync with the real needs and purposes of this country. Maybe it would take McCain to finally get the Democrats to be a little more specific.
Bill Curry, I'm also simply wondering whether the Democrats lost interest in their own insurgent too soon. And if you saw McCain coming on as the Republican nominee, wouldn't the Democrats want to be reviving the Bill Bradley alternative here?
Well, of course, the problem is that Bill Bradley has to revive his own alternative. And something happened to the Bradley campaign in September or so when he stopped doing major policy initiatives, health care, campaign finance, gun control, or all last summer. It's now the end of February. And somewhere in the beginning of the fall, I think Bradley sort of turned around and said, you know, I'm still not beating this guy. Who's got a strategy for actually beating Gore? And he kind of looked around and said, oh, the Republicans have one. Just begin to run on your own moral superiority to Gore. So just run on taint. Just say that he's too tainted by the seeming corruption of the administration. And at that point, I believe his campaign began to lose steam. He would have to pick up the thread that for some reason he let drop in order to really make a stand right now. It may be too late.
David Brooks, is it too late for Bradley?
Yeah, I think so. He shows none of the energy. You know, just watching the two campaign is a totally different experience. McCain loves being around people. Mm-hmm. The guy wakes up at 7 in the morning. He gets on a bus with reporters. It's a grilling on the back of the bus. There are about 9 reporters crammed into the back of the bus with McCain and one aide. And it's a grilling. It goes on for 2 or 3 hours. There's an event. He's out with hundreds of people. He gets back on the bus, another grilling for 2 or 3 hours, an event, grill, event, grill, till 11 at night. He loves being around people. He's got that phenomenal energy that some politicians have to love being around people. Bill Bradley's not like that. I mean, aside from all the message differences and the different levels of the campaigns at that level, people sense that Bradley is not a lover of people, and McCain genuinely is.
He's also out of sync on the issues, Bill Curry says. David Brooks, how does he get over that?
John McCain or Bill Bradley?
No, John McCain.
Well, I'm not sure he's so far out of sync. Mr. Curry is right that the Democrats have a huge advantage on almost every domestic issue. If you ask which party do you trust on this issue, it's the Democrats are trusted more, maybe not quite so much on defense and foreign policy, and maybe it's about tie on taxes, but they have a huge advantage on the issues. The one area where the Republicans have an advantage is on character and ethics. Which is the personification of McCain, which is why I think he's a stronger candidate. George W. Bush talks about what can he talk about against Al Gore? Welfare reform? Not really. School choice? Very tough issue for Republicans to sell. So on the issue, if it's strictly an issue war, I think it is a Democratic year.
Stand by for callers, 1-800-423-8255. Campaign 2000 connection. Eddie is calling from Amherst, Massachusetts.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can, Eddie. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I've got a comment and a question. I'll try to keep them short. The comment is I watched George W. Bush in Kansas City last night speaking, and I got the feeling that he's hollow, basically, at the core, therefore dangerous. You used the word callow before somebody did, and in with that case, he just seems kind of scary to me. Like, you don't know what he'll do. So that's my comment. And McCain has it all over him there, obviously, at least in terms of perception. Now, my question, it's about money, and it's two parts. One is the campaign spending angle. How much does money actually play in creating that message and bringing out votes? And the second one, which might be more important or related, I think, is the relation to corporate interests in the U.S. And McCain seems more of a threat to me to the entrenched corporate interests, and Bush seems more like their boy. And I wonder if you could talk about the money angle from those two.
David Brooks, give us a great answer, and we'll let you go home.
Okay. Well, it's sort of ironic. McCain talks about the evil influence of money in politics, but if money was so powerful, he'd be losing because he's been outspent dramatically. So money just doesn't carry it all the way, as we've learned. I mean, money's a help. You need a threshold of money, we've learned. But Bush has been, you know, terribly outspending McCain and losing. So it's not just that. So he's sort of weakening his own case. Bush being dangerous. I think that's not true. You know, he's a very disciplined campaigner, very disciplined governor, very bipartisan governor in Texas. The Democrats really like him because he works in a bipartisan way. You wouldn't know it from the way he campaigns. But he's not a dangerous guy. He's a guy with tremendous personal charm. His essential problem is nobody knows what he did with the first 40 years of his life. He seemed to just mess around doing, just enjoying himself. And that creates doubts about people, and it creates doubts in his own self-confidence, because he doesn't talk about issues the way Al Gore does, who spent his life mastering them, and so has a deeper understanding of each domestic policy issue.
David Brooks, you're great. We love you, and thank you for joining us again on The Connection.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
David Brooks, senior editor of the Weekly Standard. Bill Curry, would you answer Eddie's question very directly? I mean, is callow a nice way of saying hollow? Callow was your word.
Well, it's a little different than that, although, again, I mean, from the very beginning with Bush and accelerating now that he's under the microscope of a presidential campaign, you just don't, you know, Bush seems like a person, you know, but being governor for Bush, it's been like high school with money, you know. All of his friends have done well. He's done well. He's having a good time. Like other governors, he's reveled in the national economy. And I think that whenever I sit and watch him on display, I think I'm struck in contrast to what I forget whether Mr. Brooks, Mr. Brownstein, but I'm not struck that his grasp of these issues is, for instance, particularly greater than Mr. McCain's. I think he has a real problem. When I picture a debate with Al Gore and remembering what Gore did to Kemp and to Ross Perot, and then I look at Bush and I think, geez, bring it on. Great.
Interesting. 1-800-423-8255. Thank you, Eddie. 1-800-423-TALK, the Campaign 2000 Connection. Richard is on the line.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Richard.
If we assume, and I think it's fair given the fortitude of Mr. McCain, that both arrive at the Republican convention and make their speeches on the floor and what have you, I guess what I'm asking is, what will that fight be like? And assuming that it does take place because both will have delegates, what's the outcome, not only for the winning candidate, but in November?
It's an interesting question, and it really has to do, I think, with how the depth of the kinds of raw emotional divisions that we saw in South Carolina. What do you think, Bill Curry?
Let me say a couple of things. First of all, I'm reminded of what happened in 1996 with Clinton, and I see some of this happening with Gore right now, both against Bradley and then presumably against either McCain or Bush in the fall. We had maintained a lead of about 15 points for well over a year, and then in the last 10 days of that election, that lead was cut in half. Clinton lost his majority, his mandate, and the House. And that was principally because the charges of corruption were unanswered. The president's senior advisors, a majority wanted to keep him away from the microphones. And there were answers, more so than people thought, I think. But at the very least, he had to come up and own responsibility, promise real change, and move on. Gore Bush has sent, it's as if Bush has sent Gore the playbook for his fall campaign. He's going to go after him on character. He's going to go after him on corruption. He's going to try to make that the issue. And just as he's attacking McCain for not being a conservative, when McCain is, if anything, more conservative than Bush, I would argue, attacking Gore on character, you know, up until a year ago, Gore was, the rap on Gore was he was a Boy Scout, or up until a couple of years ago. The one thing I know with certainty, having dealt with Al Gore for so many years, this is a person of tremendous integrity and professionalism and intelligence. If Bush makes the mistake of making that the ground, Gore just has to make sure that he doesn't make the mistake of not answering, of doing what Clinton did in 96, of letting the charge sit there. Gore has to come up. When someone says you're dishonest, you ought to get angry about it. You ought to answer it explicitly. He hasn't been doing that enough, actually, up until the Apollo Theater debate with Bradley. He really has to do it with Bush. And then, as I said, secondly, they've got to make this a specific, particularly if it's McCain. They have to say to people, look, these are both good people. I'm a good guy. He's a good guy. Which road do you want to walk here? They have to transform that into a campaign over the particulars.
Richard, thank you for calling. 1-800-423-8255. Mike is calling from a cell phone in Newport News, Virginia.
Yeah, so thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Mike.
I just wanted to say that honestly, I feel like McCain has sort of revitalized me personally in terms of getting involved with this election.
A lot of people feel that way, Mike. I wish you'd just sort of spell it out.
Yeah.
Well,
McCain is good. He seems to be just, he's like a good World Series or a pennant race or something. There are a lot of vibrations that spill off the McCain campaign into other parts of American life. Tell us about your own head.
Well, honestly, I'm 23 years old. I had the opportunity to vote in the last election, but I didn't. I feel like I didn't do that because I really didn't feel like I would be choosing the proper candidate. I felt like I would be choosing between the lesser of two evils.
Mm-hmm.
Like I, Personally, I feel positive about McCain, which is something refreshing for me, and that I'm not choosing someone who would I least like to have in office, but you know, who do I really feel like is going to be there representing me, and taking good stances on the corruption and on the other issues that really matter in my life. So,
just out of curiosity, Mike, is it the Vietnam past? Is it the stand? Is it his Senate posture? Is it campaign reform? Is it things he said in his campaign? Where does John McCain grab you?
He really grabs me in terms of just his charisma, just in terms of a straight shooter mentality that he seems to project. And I guess in stark contrast to George Bush, who I sort of feel is I hesitate to use the word slimy, but really he just sort of feels slippery to me.
What's the contrast with Al Gore?
Al Gore, like you said a few minutes ago, I still sort of see him as the Boy Scout, and that could be good, but at the same time I feel like McCain is more the one who takes control out of that situation.
Mike, it's very interesting. Bill Curry, I wish you'd comment on that. To me, the thing about Al Gore is not corruption, despite the sort of the Buddhist fundraising and the, you know, where he made the phone calls. It's going to be more just what Mike is talking about, that he's been too long at the fair. He's just been in the ring too long.
I think that's, first of all, that's a problem that faces any vice president in particular. How do you step out of that shadow of your boss? And then number two, how do you seem fresh? George Bush, the father, getting up and saying, we are the change at his nominating convention in 88, and making that work. I agree that it is a challenge, but again, I think that the key here for the Democrats is to make this election a referendum on two things. One, the performance domestically and internationally in the last 8 years, but most importantly on the future. And insofar as the Democrats can specify, right now Gore gets up and says, I'm a fighter who wants to fight for you because I've not yet begun to fight for working families. it's not enough. It's not enough. People have just are past that. Whoever puts the most compelling blueprint on the table to deal with the quality of education, the extension of health care, job security and wages and a changing economy, whoever does that has a leg up in this. And particularly if it's Bush. Bush started out trying to be what McCain is now. Bush was so anxious to jettison the right when he first started and to move to the center, and then he got turned around by the strategic position he was in. If it is Bush who is running for the fourth straight Republican election on a massive tax cut that the Republicans cannot accept, the country overwhelmingly doesn't want, if he's wedded to the social intolerance of the right and that kind of budgetary policy, we're in great shape. But if not, McCain, who is basically presenting a Clinton-like budget and a message of tolerance and, most importantly, a message of reform, Gore has to answer him on reform and then remind people of all the things they don't agree with McCain on.
1-800-423-8255, the campaign connection. David is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, David.
Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I'm interested in this idea. A friend of mine is a journalist with the Phoenix, and she had this comment that people are dropping Bradley. Coverage of Bradley is not significant because the media really just wants to focus on one reformer. You know, you've got the right and the left, or the Republican and Democrat, but then with a reformer, how many can you have? So, you know, you pick one and you leave the other. In this case, she was claiming that they picked McCain, and so Bradley just conveniently becomes a sideshow, has been, you know, hasn't really performed, already out of the race. And I heard this comment on your show, and I don't know if that's necessarily what we're talking about, but I'm concerned. And I feel like as part of the democracy, the media, if I can generalize like that, are kind of letting us down.
Well, you can say that, and certainly the Republican, the conservative Republican former is the kind of man bites dog news in the case, but you could also say that the Republican voters in New Hampshire had their opportunity, and they chose McCain, and they didn't choose Bradley. I don't know that you can blame the media here. The reporters will stick with him perhaps as long as the voters.
There was a great line in, I believe, Salon magazine, quoting Freud, saying about the anger between Gore and Bradley as reflecting the narcissism of small differences.
Yes.
These were two people whose records in the Congress were virtually identical. These are two centrist Democrats whose profiles up until the moment of this race were very, very close. And the differences between them, between them, there's a whole healthcare policy. it's more complementary, in fact, than it is in conflict. They're each just dealing with different parts of the problem. And you can go right across the board on that. I do believe that Bradley had an open window in the first part of this year to state those differences. But Democratic voters in particular credit Gore greatly for both his loyalty and the quality of his performance. They feel like he's earned it. You have to show them that he can't win or that he isn't right. And I just believe that by focusing so much on the personal, by running a campaign that is so much like the Republican campaign, Bradley has lost, who's to say if he's lost all of his chance, but he lost a great deal of it.
One last call. Richard is on the line. Are you there, Richard?
I am.
Thank you. Yeah, we got you. We got to be quick.
Yeah, I'll be quick. Just I'm very encouraged by what is happening here with the emergence of first-time voters suddenly in the primaries. I'm also encouraged with the apparent lifting of the average intellect of the U.S. voter. You're looking beyond the immediate soundbite type of issues that they get. Well, I think one thing that sticks out right now in this primary is how McCain is the same man, state to state, primary to primary, speech to speech.
Yeah.
And the American public has seen George Bush say whatever is right at the moment with the audience he has. And he changes from day to day, place to place. And it's becoming very clear, I hope. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Bill Curry, you get the last word.
I think the caller is really on to something. The politicians and the consultants and the press don't understand the degree to which the voters who are left participating are paying attention and are demanding and rewarding substance.
Bill Curry, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. Thanks also to David Brooks and to Ron Brownstein, who joined us earlier in the hour. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston.
Parts of the connection are available for $15, including shipping and handling. To order, call 1-800-909-9287. That's 1-800-909-9287.
Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
From Boston University, this is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, also by Cambridge Incubator, announcing a nonprofit internet business plan competition, sponsored by Rocom, Akamai, and IXL. Competition information is available at cambridgeincubator.com.